Now we're going to look at the second reading. And as you know, we're in the letter of James. The first reading prepares for the gospel. So the dominating selection is the gospel. And we're going through Mark right now. And we have now the text, as you'll see in Mark, where Jesus predicts his passion and Peter tries to talk him out of it. And boy, he hears from Jesus. And so then, so we pick an Old Testament text that shows the servant, and a psalm that shows the suffering man being delivered. Now, James follows his own trajectory. And it fits sometimes easily and sometimes not, but it's very precious. Usually Paul, sometimes Acts, Revelation, but right now we're going through the letter of James. Okay. So, James, the practical man. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith but does not have works? Can faith save him? That's a challenge, right? Because Paul says we're saved by faith. Now, is he trying to contradict Paul? No, he's trying to straighten these people out. Does Paul have works? He's traveling all over the world, preaching in languages he doesn't even know. He gets shipwrecked. He gets rejected. He gets stoned. They left him for dead. Maybe he was dead and they raised him. Who knows? You know, he's betrayed by his own, whom he loves. He's got works. Not a problem with Paul. Problem with us. So James is concerned. Oh, I believe I'm fine. You see, my friends, this is why I want to talk about faith and culture. You know, I get to Mass every Sunday. And do you commit adultery during the week? I mean, there's more. It's a life which we offer to God in response for his incredible mercy and generosity and initiative. We believe because he gave us faith. That's why that beautiful text we had from St. Thomas. See, that light moves the will. Truth becomes appetible, and we want it, and we yield to it. And that's why we believe. Okay. What good is it, my brothers, if someone says he has faith and does not have works? Can that faith save him? No, that faith can't. That's like I'm saying, I go to church every Sunday, but I commit adultery during the week. That faith will not save you. It's better than not going, because one of these days you might have a conversion. But it's not going to help you. Okay. Now he gives an example. If a brother or sister has nothing to wear and has no food for the day, and one of you says to them, go in peace, keep warm, and eat well, but you do not give them the necessities of the body, what good is it? Blah, blah, blah. That's faith? No, that's not faith. Faith is a life. Faith is a way of knowing. Faith is having the divine reality permeate your consciousness, your body, your emotions, your will, so that you live like a Christian. You see, it's not enough. Indeed, faith of itself, if it does not have works or culture, is dead. Indeed, someone may say, you have faith and I have works. Demonstrate your faith to me without works, and I will demonstrate my faith to you from my works. There's a beautiful text in Galatians. Love, agape, energizing through faith. If I could remember the exact number, I'd look it up for you, but I think it's in Galatians 5, but I don't dare take time to look for it now. Love is what makes faith come alive. You see, faith puts us in touch with God. And that if we yield in love to God and obey him, you see, then faith comes alive. And faith grows into knowledge. Faith is a way of knowing. I've given you this example many times before, but it's a good one. Someone once said to Mrs. Einstein, do you know Dr. Einstein's theory, Mrs. Einstein? She said, no, but I know Dr. Einstein. You see, faith gives us that kind of knowledge of God. Okay. So, I want to go back now and continue our discussion about culture. Because works comes down to culture. Do we do anything about it? You know, Are there arguments in the home? Are the kids not cared for? Are you too busy with whatever? Or is it a living? Because after all, the church, I mean the family, is a domestic church. And in the family, according to both St. Augustine and St. John Chrysostom, the father of the family holds the place of the bishop in the diocese. As the bishop is to the diocese, the father is to the family. Has spiritual care, spiritual responsibility to teach, spiritual to care and show the father's love. You see? And that, a father, is a combination of two realities, truth and compassion. Both. One without the other. Truth without compassion is harsh. Compassion without truth is sloppy. It's both. Okay. And so, we go on with this consideration about culture. In our culture now, and I've traced it briefly before sometimes, there is no faith. God is systematically excluded from the culture. And the result? Death. Death. It's a culture of death. Death is the solution to every problem. A woman pregnant, not at a convenient time, or because of a mistake, or now she's... Solution? Death. You're fighting with this other nation? Solution? Death. Down here in Washington, every once in a while you read in the paper, two boys were fighting over basketball shoes, and one pulls out a gun and kills the other. Solution? Death. It's a culture of death. Not a culture of life. And what hangs over it like a pall, governing all of that, is abortion. That is where you see the reign of the culture of death. And it affects everybody, including those who have abortions. Okay. Now, that 11 years after that quote I gave you, John Paul II is now addressing the Council for Culture. He established a Council for Culture. Because a faith which does not become culture is a faith which has not been fully received, completely embraced, or thoroughly thought through. Faith has to produce a way of life. Well, do we have to start with the whole culture? No. Start with a family. Start with a group of families. It will become so beautiful, people will knock down the doors to join you. It happens all the time in the neighborhood. Christian family, the others say, what are you doing? Your kids love you. They obey you. They come home when you call them. They like to be around the home. They look at peace. You too look at peace. What's your secret? That's how you evangelize. Okay. So, this is John Paul II. It's an address he gave in 1994. The phenomenon of non-belief, that's where Europe is in its captivity right now. Non-belief. It's not a question of invoking God or thinking about God. We're going to have the European Union. We're going to have shared economics. We're going to have all on my will. We're going to take care of the poor. Why? Because they bother me. No. Because they bother Christ. They bother the poor. That's why. We're not going to have a perfectly just society so that we can strut. We're going to have a perfectly just society that Christ is served. And so, the phenomenon of non-belief, together with its practical consequences, which are the secularization of social and private life, try bringing up God at a bridge table. See what happens? I mean, can you go home? You know? So secularization of private, social and private life, religious indifference, or even the unequivocal rejection of all religion as the preface to the European Union's statement, right? Not a word about the Christian faith, which is that which gave Europe its power, its art, its thought, its civilization, never mentioned. John Paul II called them to task. So now there's a little line in there. We recognize our religious origins. They're not religious origins, they're the Christian faith. However, remains one of the most urgent matters for your reflection to this group that he founded, this Council for Culture. It would be appropriate to seek this non-belief its cultural, historical, social, and intellectual causes, and at the same time to promote a respectful and open dialogue with those who do not believe in God or who profess no religion. Organizing meetings and exchanges with them, have you done in the past, this cannot but be productive. I remember listening, this comes to me at this moment, Cardinal Martini, who had been a close friend for years. I had him as a professor, actually, and he was the president of the board when I defended my thesis. And then he became the Bishop of Milano. I would fly up to see him. Now he's retired. He lives in the Holy Land. But anyway, he had open conversation with atheists. And I went to one of them one night. It was beautiful. It was so respectful on both sides. But so clear. Where is the difference, you see? Can you interpret what you see correctly? It was really an eye-opener for me. That's the way you dialogue, okay? Now, I want to look now, into the reality of the secularization of social and private life, religious indifference, or even unequivocal rejection of all religions. Why? Because, my friends, this is our culture. This is our culture. It was bad enough when that culture took over and tolerated the Christians. Now is war against the Christians. And what are we going to do about it? You see? Well, you can do what Cardinal Martini used to do there in Milano. Have a dialogue. Talk. Why do you reject God? Why do you think there's no God? Because what's-his-name wrote a book about it? Have you really thought about it? Somewhere in here, I think I give that quote from the Supreme Court, that it is the right of every person to define for himself the meaning of life. Against what criteria? Who do you talk to? You just say, life is for power, money, sex, something. That's my interpretation of life. Don't you want to check it out? Don't you want to think about it? Evidently not. That's a Supreme Court decision in the state of Pennsylvania versus Casey. All right. The story of the rise of modern atheism, now it's going to get a little philosophical for a few minutes, can be described as the story of the successive alienation of the thinking subject from that which he knows. That is out there, and I grab it, I determine it, I say what it means, I say what it is. That began with dear old William of Ockham and Duns Scotus. Now, they were in a religious context, you know, and they weren't really, but it took over. So that now, those who believe in God are the screwballs. And that's by decree, not by reason. You see? Once physics proved that that the universe had an intrinsic intelligibility. You could figure out why ice water expands, figure out you can build bridges, build atom bombs, build babies, all because of the laws of physics. So what you have done what? You have explained, you see, everything by the law of physics in its own interaction. But have you explained the existence of the whole thing? No. And you can't. So you have recourse. Well, it came from another planet. The gases exploded, blah, blah, blah. Where did the gases come? Little kids ask this. Where did the gases come from? How come they exploded? How come they made life? You see? Yes. Physics can explain the relation of the laws of the physical universe. But it cannot explain where the whole thing came from.